Today is a very special day. Today is the third day of the month of Tammuz. And this is the day that the Lubavitcher Rebbe decided to leave the world. And when a tzaddik leaves the world, he leaves a mark on the world. A day that the tzaddik decides to leave this world, he leaves this world from his body, but the neshama of the tzaddik is eternal, and the neshama of the tzaddik stays with us forever. This is applicable to all the tzaddikim. And the day that the tzaddik decides to leave the world, he leaves a certain mark on the world. And it's a day of celebration because it means the tzaddik reaches completion. He did what he was supposed to do, and that's it. And he moves on. Now, specifically, I don't know with other tzaddikim, specifically the Lubavitcher Rebbe demanded and requested that there's not going to be eulogies, and there's not going to be talking how great one was and so forth. But this is not what I want to talk about today. It is a very special day. Each one commemorates it in their own way. We're not going to get into the personal opinions about the day, but it's a day to point out something that we all need to focus on, and we need to understand. And I decided, when we sent the email, we called the class The Secret Behind the Vision. Because obviously the Rebbe had a vision, and there was a secret behind this vision, and unfortunately, both Lubavitchers and non-Lubavitchers don't really see this vision, and even if they see the vision, they don't understand the secret behind it to actually do it. Now, we have to understand one of the many qualities and the many unique things that the Lubavitcher Rebbe had is that he came from the ashes of the Holocaust. It was a real big turning point for the Jews throughout history. We know, based on the teachings of the Zohar, that right before Mashiach is going to come, there's going to have to be a period of 72 years of suffering. This is called Chevlei Mashiach. Chevlei Mashiach is compared to the concept, what is called Chevlei Leida. A woman, when she goes into labor, she goes through pain. And it's called going through labor. Some women are lucky, it's one day. Some women are less lucky, it's 3 days. Some women take epidural, they don't feel the pain. Some women go through it naturally. But a woman that is giving birth goes through labor pain. Same thing here, as a nation, the length of the exile is compared to a woman in pregnancy, and before the time for the redemption, we have to go through a period of Chevlei Leida, of hardship. The Zohar says that right before Mashiach is going to come, there's going to be 72 years of this Chevlei Leida. And the Zohar actually explains in a very interesting way, in three different places in the Zohar, that when is the spirit going to come? And the Zohar is not talking in a very open way, rather in a very concealed way, by saying, it's saying, and I'm quoting, when the Shekhinah, the feminine aspect of the divine, which is the souls of the Jews, Nishmot Israel, when the Shekhinah is going to put its head between its knees, and the Shekhinah is going to be dwelling between Netzach and Hod, this is when the suffering is going to start. So it's very easy to calculate, because in the 10 Sefirot, between Netzach and Hod is between 7 and 8. It's basically talking about 700. In the 5th millennium, so you're talking about at 5,700. 5,700 is the year Tafshin. Tafshin in the non-Jewish calendar is 1939. Very simple. The Zohar says this is when the suffering is going to begin. And with our own eyes, we saw that the suffering of our nation started at that time. In that time was like a turning point that we, unfortunately, besides losing millions of Jews, we also lost the majority of the leadership and the tzaddikim in our nation. Hundreds of tzaddikim were murdered in the Holocaust. And literally our entire structure of leadership was burned down. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe came out of the Holocaust. He himself, he was in the Holocaust. He was in Warsaw at the time, in Poland. And he was able to run away. So his unique vision was that it's building our nation out of the ashes. Now he had a very different approach that was not accepted by many people. But his approach was very, very different about how, coming out of the Holocaust, seeing such a devastation and having such a negative opinion of the world, rather he was like, no, in every bad there's also good. And when in order to have a new birth must be a destruction. We see that in any situation, that in order for something new to come, a new birth, a new beginning, has to have a destruction. That's the nature of the world. Take now a seed, any type of seed, and put it on the table. And if you're going to water the seed, and you're going to put manure on the seed, and you're going to sing to the seed, doesn't matter what's going to happen, what are you going to do? The seed is not going to sprout. It's not going to grow. You have to put the seed into the ground. And while it's in the ground, in order for the seed to start growing, first it has to completely rot. Completely rot. And be destroyed. And then it will start sprouting and a new beginning will start. And this is the same thing when a husband and wife are together. When the sperm meets the egg. The sperm and the egg has to completely decomposed, but rather has to be completely destroyed in order for it to start developing an embryo. So the nature of the world is that in order to have a new beginning must be a destruction. That's how it works. And we see it in many different places in the Torah and in the Oral Torah. So in order to get a new beginning, the beginning of the redemption, had to be a destruction, had to be some type of a period of a destruction. Now, really, we can sit here now for weeks and talk about the amazing things that Lubavitcher Rebbe did and what he brought down to the world. Needless to say, the wisdom, the Torah that he brought to the world. I mean, we know many, many tzaddikim that are amazing. Some of them are just amazing in their level of tzaddikut, but very few are actually bringing a new Torah into the world. So throughout the time, we saw pillars in our generations that they brought something new. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai brought the Zohar, the Arizal brought Kabbalah, the Baal Shem Tov, the whole teachings of Hasidut. We see in many stages a certain tzaddik that came and brought a whole new light, shedding a whole new light on the world with the Torah. There's not even a way to express the value in the Torah, both in the oral, the mystical, the written Torah, what the Lubavitcher Rebbe was able to reveal to us. But mainly what I want to talk about today, that the Rebbe exposed something that was totally ignored for thousands of years. The vision of the Rebbe was to bring the redemption. That was the vision. There was no question here. The Rebbe was all about bringing the redemption. But the secrets behind it. So we saw more or less the pattern what the Lubavitcher Rebbe was working on. He was working on developing an army of leaders, not developing followers. He didn't care about followers. If there was Facebook 23 years ago, the Lubavitcher Rebbe would not have a Facebook page. He did not care about followers. There's a story that one time Chassid came to him and he told him, that if you would wear a shtreimel, the furry hat, if you would wear a shtreimel, you would have overnight another 50,000 students, followers. So the Rebbe told him, I don't want those 50,000 followers. I want the ones that are not going to come to me because I'm wearing a shtreimel. If I'm going to wear a shtreimel, nobody's going to come to me. Therefore, he went with this cool-looking hat. that looks like an Indiana Jones hat. It's not a regular type of a hat, especially at the time. Then at the time, I think he was the first one that actually wore a tie and a nice suit, because his agenda was not to get the ones who are already on board to be closer, to get the ones that are far away. So he didn't care about followers, he didn't care about being popular. He wanted to develop leaders, because a follower is a very nice thing. But a leader, a true leader, is a person who pulls people, who inspires people. And he knew already, I can't reach everybody, so I can develop leaders. And the leaders will go and create their followers, and they should create more leaders. So there are three major things that I at least are the most inspired by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I try to follow that path. But the point is that I'm no different than anybody else, and everybody has to apply it. The first and most important thing is the power of influencing another person. And it's very obvious that everybody has that power. You can call it a shaliach, you can call it an emissary, you can call it however you want to call it. But each and every one of us has the ability to go and inspire somebody else. You don't need to have a beard, you don't need to have a hat, you don't need to be a rebbetzin, you don't have to be knowledgeable. You have to care. That's what it is. It's about caring to another person's well-being. And I don't need to be so religious, I don't have to be so observant, but I need to care about somebody else. And when I care about somebody else's well-being, then I will worry about what can I do for somebody else. And a lot of people say, listen, I don't know how to teach Torah. I don't know how to inspire somebody. It has nothing to do with Torah. It has to do with caring for another human being. This is called the Ahavta Le'acha Kamocha, that you love another person with no conditions. And that is the first and most important motion for one to get out of their own exile. And mainly, the bottom line here is how we're bringing together as a unit the redemption. Because that's what we're here for. And the way to bring it is to be able to come out of my limitation and to have on my front line, what am I doing today to make sure that I'm helping and influencing somebody else? And that has to be my daily agenda. And again, you don't have to have a long beard, you don't have to be a rabbi, you don't have to be a rebbetzin, you have to be a good-hearted person that says, Hashem gave me, what can I give somebody else? Where can I contribute part of mine to somebody else, whether it's in the physical, in the spiritual, in the emotional, whatever it is. But I have to start my day by saying, I am here to help somebody. Where am I helping somebody else? So today it might be with a dollar, tomorrow it might be with a ride, the next day it might be with my time, the following day it will be with my knowledge, whatever it is. But the point is that in order for me to influence somebody, I have to become a leader. And again, you don't have to be a head of a community or a rabbi or a rebbetzin. The main motion, what the Rebbe was doing, is to create leaders. There's a very interesting story that in the 60s or the 70s, I don't exactly remember when, they started the Peace Corps in America. And they wanted to create a force that goes out, not necessarily in the country, throughout the world, and bringing peace and love and salvation. Believe it or not, they came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe to ask for advice. How did you do it? How were you able to send emissaries? How were you able to recruit such devoted people to the cause? Not to you, to the cause. And to send them around the world to places that they have no connection, no community, no nothing. And they wanted to know the secret behind how he got people to be so devoted to the cause, not to him, to the cause. So even then, the Peace Corps came to the Lubavitch Rebbe with questions. How were you able to do it? His answer was to be able to inspire people to care about somebody else. It's not to care about the leader. It's not to say, I'm following orders. I'm not developing soldiers. The Lubavitch Rebbe said, I want to develop leaders. Because I can go now and I can broadcast online videos and have a lot of followers, and I have a very, you know, busy social media, and that's very nice. And Baruch Hashem now it becomes very popular, and Baruch Hashem, there are many people who start with using technology and they broadcast their message. Unfortunately, 90% of it is of this is junk, and it's not even connected to the truth. That's the problem. But it's very easy today. You buy a camera, you open a YouTube account and a Facebook account, and you start broadcasting your message, which is amazing. You get followers. The point is to create leaders, not to create followers. Now, it's not so easy to do. But when you inspire somebody to do a mitzvah, that's great. But we want to inspire somebody to be so inspired to inspire somebody else. And that's the point. And this is not something far-fetched from us. You don't have to be a tzaddik and you don't have to be a leader. I mean, a leader of a community. You have to care. And when you care enough, then you want to help a person. You know the famous story that a person was very hungry and he came to an individual who said, listen, I can either give him money or I can teach him how to fish. What is better? So of course he was lazy. He says, give me money. He says, yeah, but I can teach you how to fish and you will know how to get your own food instead of asking all the time. So one thing that I want to take from that, and I want to acquire it and I want to adopt it, is to develop the sensitivity to care to another person. Now, how do I develop this sensitivity? Hashem puts me in these situations that I need the help of somebody else. That's the reality. Every human being is being pushed to a situation that I need the advice of somebody else, or I need the help of somebody else, in one way or another. Whether it's a doctor, whether it's an advisor, whatever it is. I can't be everything. You know that even a dentist goes to a dentist? He can't do it to himself. So Hashem puts you in situations that you always are relying on somebody else's good heart. You can be number one in everything. Some things you cannot do by yourself. So Hashem designs the world in such a way that I will always be depending on somebody else. Why? To make me realize, I need somebody else's help. I'm depending on their good heart. From there, I need to develop the sensitivity that somebody needs me to. It can be my kids, it can be my wife, it can be my coworker, it can be my neighbor, it can be whoever it is. Somebody needs my help. So I have to, therefore, to develop the sensitivity that I have to do that. That I have to come and attend somebody else's needs. Now, the right way of doing it is to bring that person to be inspired so they will be inspired enough to help somebody else. And then it becomes a chain reaction because one cannot do it. One person cannot do the job. So the first and most important thing that I can take from that, and I adopted, is not how I help somebody else. Is how do I make somebody else help somebody else. And one should need to adopt that in any way that they do, and to see the value of helping other people. This is it. I want to make it short and to the point, because we kind of went over our time. There's no point of, you know, crushing water. You got the point. This is point one. Point two is the power of seeing the good in everything. Because this was one of the things that the Rebbe was, you know, most about. Yes, there's a lot of hardship. There's a lot of bad in the world. You want to concentrate on the bad? What good would it do to you? If you concentrate on the good, at least you can empower the positive. Besides the famous Hasidic Vort, that there's an argument if it was said by the Baal Shem Tov, by the Tzemach Tzedek, it doesn't really matter. The Hasidic word says, think good and it will be good. You concentrate on the negative, it will be negative. I just gave over last Sunday a short story of my overview of the trip to London. And I said how I got stuck on the highway after a car accident on the way to the airport. I mean, Baruch Hashem was a very minor car accident, but both my tires exploded on the highway on the way to the airport, and I missed the flight. And I'm sitting on the highway in a foreign country, you know, literally in the middle of the highway. I'm missing my flight, and I mean, you don't have to, if you weren't here, go look at the video. But happened to be that miraculously I stopped to get a cup of coffee because I really wanted a cup of coffee. I didn't have coffee that day. Hashem just threw a spark of divine inspiration in my mind, and I started buying food in the supermarket. I bought some trays of sushi and sandwiches and water and snacks. I'm sitting in the highway waiting for the rescue to come, and I'm like, wait a minute, I have sandwiches! And I start eating my sandwiches, and I'm all happy, and I'm sitting in the car happy, I'm listening to music, and I'm clapping, and people think I'm probably crazy. The guy's in the middle of the highway, smashed tires, and the, you know, the person that I talked with is like, you sound very calm. I was like, what do you want me to do? You want me to start screaming? What good is it going to do to me? So one can always find the good in the bad. And there's always going to be bad. That's how our life is designed. That there's always going to be bad. But one can come and say, you know what, here's a beautiful orange. I don't want to eat it because it's covered with a horrible peel. Yeah, but if you peel it, you're going to have a good, nutritious orange. No, but the peel is very bitter. Okay, but remove the peel, get to the orange. So everything in this world comes with a covering of something negative. We have the choice of concentrating on the negative, and I have a choice of concentrating on the positive. If I concentrate on the negative, I empower the negative. It's very simple. If I concentrate on the positive, then I will empower the positive. And the point is that it can be 99% negative, 1% positive, but that's one little shine of light. A little bit of light will diminish a lot of darkness. The reason why Hashem created the negative is very, very simple. Take now a candle and walk out to the street. You're not going to see the light of the candle. You're not going to even see the flame, because the power of the sun is so much more stronger that it so overpowers the light of the candle that A, the candle will not make any difference. More than that, you're not going to even see the flame. But you want to see the flame of the candle. How are you going to see it? By putting it in a completely dark room. Put it in a completely dark room, you will see now the value of that little flame. So Hashem says, listen, you are a little candle, you are a little flame. Shlomo HaMelech says, Ner Havaya Nishmat Adam, the candle of Hashem is the soul of a person. Hashem says, you are a candle. Can I see you shine if I put you next to the sun? No, so let me put you in a dark room. Now I'll see how much you shine. So Hashem orchestrated the situation that there's a lot of darkness. I can now channel myself to the darkness and I'll have not such a pleasant life. Or I can channel myself to the light. And Bechlal, in the teachings of Chassidut, that's what it's talking about. This emphasis of, just, you know, sometimes just being positive. Sometimes just looking at the good in something. Not sometimes. It's all about all the time looking at the good. You concentrate on something bad. You go to the doctor and you're constantly saying, oh my gosh, the biopsy is going to be bad, and the doctor, and this. Then of course, then the doctor is going to tell you, I'm sorry to tell you, I have bad news. But if you're walking into the doctor with your attitude already, okay, you know, nothing's happening. The doctor is going to give me now good news, and you already have a positive outlook, then you already diminish half of the problems. You don't have to deal with it. And the point is that we all have to live like that, because the reality is that we all have a hard life. This is the reality. Nobody can come and say, no, my life is perfect. Some people, unfortunately, all departments are bad. Some people, some departments are good, some departments are not good. But the reality is that no man or woman in this world right now can come and say, I'm very sorry to tell you, your theory is wrong, my life is perfect. The only ones who can come and say that are the ones who see that everything is good. So sometimes, once somebody approached the Rebbe and told him, What is the difference between emunah and bitachon? So the Rebbe told him, listen, emunah is that you believe that even that something that is bad is still good because it came from Hashem. Bitachon means that there isn't such a thing that is bad. That's the difference. If you have a lot of emunah, a lot of faith in Hashem, then you say, okay, something bad happened, but it's from Hashem. I believe in Hashem. I have faith in Hashem. The person who has bitachon, a lot of trust in Hashem, says, there's nothing bad here. The situation is not even bad. It's 100% good. That's the difference. So one needs to live with the fact that everything is good. It just looks, maybe to the human eye, like something negative. Now when you live with this attitude, then you can raise your hand and say, I'm very sorry to tell you, your theory is wrong. My life is very good. It happens to be that I have a few challenges in my life. Some of them are harder, some of them are less severe. But you want to work on your muscle? Has to be resistance. You can't go to the gym and sit like this and say, okay, I want to get in shape. Let me sit like this. Give me here. Every time I'll come for half an hour. It's not going to do anything. Even if you just go with your hands like that, there's nothing going to happen. You must have resistance. Even if it's in with 1 pound. No resistance, there's not going to be any work done on the muscle. Same thing in your brain. If you're going to just learn something simple, take now an adult and give him a sheet, and all the questions will be 1 plus 1, 2 plus 2, 3 plus 3. There's no challenge here. You just know it off by heart. You want a challenge, it has to be with resistance and something you have to overpower. So Hashem gives us challenges. There's nothing wrong with that. Look at it as a disaster, it will be a disaster. Look at it as a challenge, as an exercise, then it will be a good thing. Now, one very important thing, that this is how I see it, and unfortunately not many people see eye to eye, but we're all here for the same thing. We all want the redemption to come. One way or another, whether you agree with it, whether you are aware of it, whether you want it with all your might or not. The reality is that Mashiach is at the doorstep. It's going to happen any second. It's already very, very late. I'm sure there's a very good reason for that. But we all want Mashiach. It doesn't matter if you scream it, you don't scream it, you know it, or you don't know it, doesn't matter. Hashem is now putting hardship and pain on many, many people for us to scream already for the redemption. But we're missing a very important link in our nation, what is kind of stopping the redemption. And it was revealed to us after we got the Torah, and unfortunately for whatever reason, it was not applied for many, many years. And Baruch Hashem, 40 years ago, the Lubavitch Rebbe was the first one who actually came out and said, listen, we know what we need to do to bring the redemption. And actually, you know that we already reached the quota of what is needed to bring the redemption. We have enough mitzvot, enough tshuva, enough religious people. We reached the quota. This is when the previous Lubavitch Rebbe said, we're already ready. All is left to do is polish the buttons. Meaning that we are already ready. For 2,000 years, we achieved what we were supposed to achieve. Now you know what's the missing link? The nations of the world. 40 years ago, maybe less, don't take me exactly on the date, that's when the first individual in history came out to the world and say, we are ready to the redemption. Now we need to involve a couple billion people from the nations to be part of the redemption. And this is where most people in our generation, especially the leaders, fail, is that we're ready for the redemption. We already reached the capacity. The ones who are not ready are the Gentiles. And we have the responsibility of bringing that awareness to the world. And we're failing big time. And the redemption is not only for the Jews. The redemption is for the entire world. 3 weeks ago, we celebrated the holiday of Shavuot. And after we read the Ten Commandments, we read another commandment. And it says, "Va'itim li mamlechet kohanim ve'goy kadosh." You should be for me a nation of priests and a holy goy. Goy is a body. Basically saying, in other words, you should be the light to the nations. Why? Because the nations have to follow me too. Before we got the Torah, when the Torah was presented to us, everybody knows the famous quote, "Na'aseh v'nishma." We will do, then we would listen. We said "Na'aseh v'nishma" on 7 mitzvot. That's what we said, "Na'aseh v'nishma," on the 7 laws of Noach. Only a week later, we got another 606 mitzvot. Oh, for that, we didn't say "Na'aseh v'nishma." That was opposed on us. Right? It says that when the Jews were standing on Mount Sinai, Hashem turned the mountain upside down. Kafalem har kigigit. He turned the mountain upside down like a barrel, like a dish, and says, "If you accept my Torah, good, and if not, here is going to be the place where you're going to be buried." This is it was a pause. It was I didn't ask for that. I agreed for 7, not for 606. While we agreed for the 7 laws of Noah, and not only that, even at the time of the giving of the Torah, everybody was there, the nations were there too. Happened to be that we were front row, because we were the ones who got the information in order to give it over, but the nations were there too. The nations also have a part in the Torah. And the Torah doesn't belong to anybody. The Torah is called Hefker. That's why it was given in the desert. That Torah doesn't belong to me. And if I hold the Torah and I say, "This is mine," this is like a 4-year-old that somebody comes to his home and he doesn't let him, the friend, play with his toy. It's my toy. I mean, that's applicable to a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old. But for us, that we're supposed to be the light to the nations, and we say, "No, the Torah is mine, and it doesn't belong to you," you meaning the Gentile, then I'm not fulfilling my obligation. And for many years, which I don't know why, and it doesn't really matter why, we're not going to start dissecting it, because people say we had we were always prosecuted, and we're always murdered and raped, and I can understand. I'm not trying to justify anything. I'm just saying where are we failing in. Right now, we are failing because we have a certain amount of Jews that are waiting for their redemption. I'm not talking about right now the 90% of the Jews that are don't even know how to say Shema Israel. That's a whole different problem. That this is our obligation to go out and inspire the world. But that's what we said in the first place, that I have to have the ability to go and to inspire other people. Not to inspire the ones that are already sitting and learning Torah, even though they also have to be inspired. But sometimes they have to be inspired much more. But there are thousands and millions, forget about thousands, millions of Jews that don't even know how to read a simple verse of Shema Israel. They don't even know anything. So that's in our responsibility. But we have even a greater responsibility, even though we live in Israel. It doesn't matter. You know how many tourists come here into the city? And every person for sure has some type of a connection to a Gentile. A family friend, a relative, a co-worker, we have an obligation to inspire the nations to follow the Torah. This is called the 7 laws of Noah. And the reality is it's 7 titles. It's more like 70 mitzvot. It's not 7. I have on my website an article that I wrote, and I break down these mitzvot. It's 7 titles, but each title has underneath it another 10, 15 mitzvot. So I came up to 69 mitzvot, but I'm missing the one, but I found in many different places that it's really 70. It doesn't matter. We're not going to argue on one mitzvah. The point is that it's in my power to start bringing the nations to be part of the redemption. And it's not something that I invented. It's not that I'm coming with some cuckoo idea. A, we already know it from our sages. B, we read it clearly in the Torah. But comes the Lubavitcher Rebbe, out of the ashes of the Holocaust, builds the nation back up, strengthens the foundation of our belief, and then comes out with this bold new campaign that we have to come out and start inspiring the world. Now, the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to speak about many, many things. The most spoken topic was Mashiach. The second most spoken topic was the seven laws of Noah. He's going out to the world, approaching the Gentiles, and telling them, and inspiring them, and educating them that they have to follow the Torah, and not all the inventions. New Testament, Second Testament, this Testament, doesn't matter. We have a Torah. Baruch Hashem, I have many people who send questions through my website. Yesterday, every day, I try to answer a couple dozens of them. And yesterday I ran into a very, very interesting question by a Gentile who said, I have watched your near-death experience video and I believe every word that you say. I know you're speaking truth. My question is, did they tell you in Shamayim that the Gentile, that you have to follow Judaism? That's what it says. You have to follow Judaism, or is there any other religion? And I told him they didn't mention the word Judaism. They mentioned the word Torah. There isn't such a thing as Judaism. There's Torah. Religion is just a definition in the dictionary. But a lot of people tell me you're religious. I'm not religious. Don't call me names. I told you that not long ago I saw an interesting situation where a young individual went to the streets with tefillin in his hand, and a man approached and he came to him and he told him, do you want to put tefillin on? The young man was a teenager, maybe 16 years old. He approached the man, he says, do you want to put tefillin on? The man answers him, I'm not religious. So the boy tells him, do you want to put tefillin on? He answers him back, I'm not religious. And backwards and forth, he tells, put tefillin on, he says, I'm not religious. And I'm observing, I'm looking at him from the side, and I'm saying, he's asking him if he wants to put tefillin on. He's not asking you if you're religious, he's asking you if you want to put tefillin on. And he's answering, I'm not religious. Like, what does one has to do with the other? And this individual was asking me, if Judaism is the only way. I said, they didn't even mention the word Judaism. They mentioned the word Torah. Because the Torah belongs to the Jews and the non-Jews. We all have to follow the Torah. The difference between me and you, I have 620 mitzvot to follow, you have 70. That's it, it's very simple. You want to call it 7? Call it 7. 70 sounds frightening. Well, let's call it 7. I said, don't look for religion, don't look for the word Judaism, look for the word Torah. And we're all obligated to follow the Torah. The Torah is for everybody. And you know that after Mashiach is going to come, there's not going to be such a thing in a later stage of the Geula, of the redemption. There's not going to be such a thing as a nation. There's going to be one nation. There's not going to be Jews and Gentiles. There's going to be one nation. This is a clear prophecy in the book of Zechariah. Very clear. Psukim. They're saying there's going to be one nation. There's going to be one nation that calls the name of Hashem. So, we don't go after the word religion or Judaism. We go after the Torah. And we have the Torah already for 3,339 years. This is not chokhmah, this is not fair. I already have the Torah for years. Now, I'm preventing somebody else from their portion in the Torah. And the righteous Gentile are not the amazing people that saved people in the Holocaust. These are just amazing people. A righteous Gentile is a Gentile that follows the seven laws of Noah, and he has a place in the world to come. That's a righteous Gentile. And it's our obligation to get the Gentiles aware. Because up until that point, we're going to have a problem with hastening the redemption. Because we need the Gentiles. If we're only concentrating on ourselves, somebody said something very, very funny, but at the same time so smart, 3 weeks ago in one of our Shabbat meals. He says, the Lubavitchers, when they go out to the streets, it's called Mivtzaim, Mivtzoim. I don't even know how to translate it in English. It's not mission, but that's the thing. They go out to the streets with tefillin and candles, and if it's Sukkot, with a lulav, and if it's Pesach, with a matzah, if it's Hanukkah, with Hanukkah, whatever. This is a common thing in by Lubavitchers. But you know what they ask when they on the street, especially in America, in Israel they don't ask that, but in the diaspora, you know what they ask? Are you Jewish? What kind of a discriminating question is that? So and if I'm not, if I'm not Jewish, then you don't want to talk to me? The question should be, are you human? Are you human? Yes. Oh, good. I'm happy you're human. If you're Jewish, I have tefillin for you. If you're not Jewish, I have to teach you about the seven laws of Noah. The question has to be changed from, are you Jewish, to, can I have a minute of your time? You know, I went to the streets for many years to ask people if they want to put tefillin on. I never asked, are you Jewish? I asked the person, come here, hello, good day, good, how are you, what's your name, nice to meet you. So the point is that the attitude has to be, yes, we have to concentrate on the Jews, no doubt, because we have 90% of them that are not close to the Torah. That's a given, and there's no argument here. If I say it, easily 90% of the Jews are not connected to the Torah. Now, of course, many can argue on that, but the reality is that even though many people in our generation evaluate that there are about 16 to 20 million Jews in the world, I think it's totally off, and I think we're about 100 million Jews in the world. We're just scattered all over the place, and we're so assimilated that the majority of the Jews don't even know they're Jewish. You know that in Spain there are about 44 million people. They say that every 6 Spaniard is a Jew. Make a quick calculation. That's just like that. 7 million Jews just in Spain. What about the Jews that were left in the Holocaust in Europe? Thousands. Just in America, 80% assimilation in North America. You're talking here about millions of people that they're Jewish. They don't even know they're Jewish. I believe we're easily 100 million Jews around the world that most of them don't even know they're Jewish. I mentioned so many times, I don't want to repeat it, how my great-grandfather had a brother that his daughter got kidnapped. They lived in Lebanon. It was a common thing that the girls used to get kidnapped because they were fair, they were more pretty, they had blue eyes and so forth. They would get kidnapped and sold to tribes. And there wasn't police, there wasn't Interpol, and the kid just disappears. You live with it. And my great-grandfather, his brother, the daughter got kidnapped. Many years later, they found her in Jordan. She was already married with a family and kids. It wasn't the type of the scenario that they can tell her, hey, listen, she's belongs to us. Try to talk to these tribes. You'll get your head disattached from the body faster than you can blink. So somewhere in Jordan, I have cousins, a lot of them. And maybe they migrated to Saudi Arabia and, I don't know, the Iraq, I don't know where. You know how many Jews are in all the Arab countries? Besides the one that didn't want to leave because they were comfortable and they're just there? So I believe that there are millions and millions of Jews, they don't even know the Jewish. So forget about the 90% of the Jews that are not even observant, but okay, Mashiach is going to come, is going to start getting everybody, waking everybody up. But we still have to, I'm not saying chas v'shalom to neglect the Jews. But we have a very strong responsibility to go and inspire the nations, and that is going to be one of the big sections, big parts that will hasten the Geulah. And again, I don't know exactly when, I'm saying 30 to 40 years ago, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe was the first one who came out and said, start the campaign, start teaching the law, the nations, that they have to follow the laws. Now, the result is that right now, there are millions, I don't know if to tell you 2 million or 10 million, but there are in the millions of Noahites in the world. There are communities of Noahites in the world, in the Philippines, in the Indonesia, in America, millions that they live the life like Noahites. They follow the laws of Noah. They call themselves Noahites. These are the righteous Gentiles. And we need them for the redemption. If we don't going to have them, the exile is going to be smeared much, much longer. We have to come to the realization that it's not only about us. And the redemption is for everybody. You know, when Shlomo HaMelech built the Holy Temple, you know that the non-Jews used to come and offer sacrifices? Bet HaMikdash is for everybody. The Holy Temple is for everybody. So, I have to apply the sensitivity. That's supposed to wake us up. We have to apply the sensitivity, not only to love. You know, when the Torah says, Ve'ahavta le'reacha kamocha, it doesn't say, Ve'ahavta le'yehudi kamocha. See, another wake-up call. It's just to affirm what I'm saying. The Torah says, Ve'ahavta le'reacha kamocha, love your fellow person, your fellow friend. It doesn't say fellow Jew. Meaning that I have to love every person and to develop this sensitivity to everyone. Now, I'm not coming and telling you you have to love the terrorists that want to destroy us. You don't have to love the Nazis that want to burn us. You don't have to love the person that's calling for our extermination. That's not what I'm talking about. Yes, 2/3 of the world are evil and are against us. There's no question here. And our sages say that 2/3 of them will be disappearing from the world when the redemption will come. But you're still looking at a third. It's about 2 billion people. There are 2 billion people of amazing people out there. And these are the righteous Gentiles that it's my responsibility to care for them and to inspire them and to have the sensitivity to their needs too. And I have to do whatever I can in my ability to be part of this campaign. And I don't believe that one person can say, I don't know any Gentile. There's no such a thing. I lived in America for 18 years. I have Gentile friends. Amazing people. Co-workers, followers, family. How many people are converts? You know how many people are around us that are converts? That have 90% of their family and friends are Gentiles. Look at the Kiddush Hashem, what one Jew can do, one convert can do. So we all have the ability and the responsibility. And when I spoke about that a few weeks ago, somebody told me, I live here in Israel, and I said, go out to the streets. You know how many Gentiles come and visit Tzfat? So instead of, you know, and behaving like a typical Israeli, then be welcoming, inspire, talk, be nice. Sometimes it just takes to be a little bit nice. Besides, what, you don't travel? I told this in the video, you don't travel? You don't go on vacations? Where do you go on vacations? To Herzliya? You go to vacations in London, in Paris, in America, and behave like a normal human being. Represent us. You know, I flew now when I flew back to Israel, I usually fly with El Al for many different reasons. I saw something so interesting. I walked up to the plane, it had a sticker on the plane, and it says, abroad, you represent the country. Please behave appropriately. And I was like, wow, look how nice. A sticker, a bumper sticker on the plane of El Al. And I was like, this is amazing. And look how smart, abroad, you represent the country. Please behave appropriately. So I walk in the street in the world, I represent Hashem. I go out now to the world. Most people, their vacations are out of the country. I mean, there's no excuses. So, to kind of summarize it up, we're not going to talk about the greatness of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, because there's no question here how great he was. That's not the question. And his request was not to start utilizing and talking how great he was. He's like, I don't need the praises. I need actions. The Lubavitcher Rebbe demanded actions, not... He didn't like fluff. Don't come and start pretending and being, oh, I'm so great. Bring me actions. Bring me results. Somebody, you know, now because of the day of the passing, all the videos are in the social media and all these messages. So somebody sent me an interesting message. And an interesting video. The whole video is how world leaders came to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe was rebuking them that he's not satisfied with what they're doing. Some guy came and he says, oh, I did this and I did this and I did that. The Rebbe says, what are you trying to convince me and think that I'm satisfied? You're not doing enough. And the person is like, what? I just told you I donated millions of dollars to build yeshivas. Is the rabbi's like, that's not enough. But why are you, what are you, tapping yourself on the back? No, it's not enough. So we have to have this power of demanding from ourselves. Nothing is enough. I can do much, much more. So I have to see this, to develop the sensitivity for every human being. That there's a soul in there, and they have to reach to their purpose, Jew or non-Jew. Next, I can only do that if my vision of the world is positive. If my vision of the world is negative, I'm not going to achieve anything. I'm going to wake up in the morning, take the blanket and go like this, and hit the snooze button and say, I want to wake up at 11 because I'm depressed. If I have a positive outlook of the world, then everything will be positive. Every obstacle, every challenge will be a step for me to grow a little bit higher. A challenge is a step. The more challenges you have, the higher you grow. That's it. It's very, very simple. If not, you're staying in the same level. Challenges are steps. And they're not like these steps what they have in the airports or the malls that the steps go down. How do you call them? The escalators. You know, it's supposed to escalate you. It doesn't. It just, you know, the steps get swallowed into the ground. Even in the airport, everybody's going on the escalators. I like going on the regular steps because I want to feel how I'm going one step after the other. Everybody's going on these conveyor belts that they're taking you. And the funny thing, they stand like this. Like these, the you know, like mannequins. And you walk with a suitcase, you're like, hey, I'm walking very slow and I'm 10 times faster than you. Just use your legs and you'll get there faster. So, you know, the deception of the world makes you feel, ooh, I'm being taken now. But you've been taken, but you're laid behind. Yeah. So our challenges are these steps in my life that I grow and I grow and I grow. But the bottom line is that we want Mashiach now. This was one of the famous slogans that the Lubavitch Rebbe came out. We want Mashiach now. So what are you doing about it? And we are doing a lot, Bemet. We all trying our best. But we're missing one link that I do believe is the missing link to hasten the redemption, because we need masses of the Gentiles to be on board. And the redemption is also for them. We can't be selfish and say, no, it's just for me. What do you think, Mashiach is going to come and we're only going to be us? No. There's going to be an entire world, including all the Gentiles that are righteous. And it's in our obligation to go and make this happen. And if we're not going to do it, we're still going to be running on the conveyor belt that is not taking me anywhere. And it feels like I'm doing something, but I'm not going anywhere. So Bezat Hashem, at least we should take from this day is a day of inspiration. Any day of passing of a tzaddik is a day that one needs to take right decisions, to look to the future, to say, where can I get better? Where can I make a change? Where can I improve myself? And when it comes to the action of bringing the redemption, then I have to apply it. And I can't say, oh, I woke up 3 days ago, I woke up early to go to a minyan, and 3 weeks ago, I gave $2 donation. And I'm not making chas v'shalom a joke about anybody, but you know, sometimes the $2 donation of somebody is like $2 million of somebody else. Don't chas v'shalom think I'm mocking people's donations. It's more the effort than the actual digits. The point is, one cannot say I did something 3 weeks ago and that's enough. Every day has to be a demanding to be growing and be much, much better. And if we apply all this, we are guaranteed that we will see with our eyes. I mean, the Lubavitcher Rebbe himself even said, we are the generation of the redemption. We will see it with our own eyes. And if he said that, that's an authority that is applicable. Nobody can come and doubt that. But we want to see it with our own eyes when our eyes have less, how do you call the marks? Wrinkles. That's the other day. My daughter comes and tells me, Abba, you're becoming very old. I'm like, what do you mean very old? I'm only 43. She was like, but look how many wrinkles you have. I said, that's because you don't do your homework. So we want to see Mashiach with our own eyes, but without too many wrinkles. Bezat Hashem, it should happen very speedy in our days. We should see it. We should be involved. We should be responsible. We should take part in hastening the redemption. And it should happen speedy, it should happen b'chesed, with mercy, with kindness, b'ezrat Hashem, with the blessings of the tzaddik, and the teachings of the tzaddik, we should grow and grow and grow. And really, we should all be blessed with success, happiness, prosperity, and the ultimate blessing that we all wish for ourselves is to see the redemption with our own eyes.